Hey, folks, and hey, Sarah.
Hi, welcome home. I'm good.
You, something different about you. I'm not quite sure.
This is the green shirt.
I need the green shirt.
I'm not wearing the blue shirt this time.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what that is. Well, I'll have to look at some of our other videos to find out. I've been away, and it is good to be back. I'm no longer on the road, although I guess I'm, still kind of on the road.
Yeah,
right?
Pit stop at home.
Pit stop in Dallas. And as we're here in this pit stop, we're going to record a podcast, a couple of them, actually. This one is an interesting one because this guy reached out to me to be a guest on our podcast. I'm just going to read to you, folks, what he says is his occupation. He says, I am a politician, a business owner, biologist, chemist, bouncer, bartender, philosopher, psychologist, football coach, former drug dealer, and general wild child that just wants to make the world a better place. How do you think one man can find that much time to do all those different things?
I'm not sure. You have lots of lives. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's a wild card a bit, too, to say that, but we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. At any rate, I think he's probably going to be very interesting, a person to talk to. So today's guest is Charlie Thompson out of Alabama.
I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere.
So, Charlie, that's quite a resume you sent me.
Yes.
I got to tell you, when you started off with politician, all right, I don't think I was quite expecting somebody with half their head shaved wearing a Batman shirt. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm here in Huntsville. I was actually born here. I went to college in Birmingham, got a degree in biology there, and came back to Huntsville and got a degree in chemistry here. You know, when I was a kid, I was a drug dealer. That was kind of how I grew up in the youth. You know, that was my thing. So, you know, I improved myself trying to get out of the streets and, you know, get into a better position in life. And that's where once I hit like 22, I was going to go to medical school. And then I decided not to because I had school burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I've never been able to go inside a classroom again without just feeling horrible. It's like, I can't do it anymore. So then it was like, well, build your own business. And so you started building businesses. And then, you know, it was like, well, I found out I could always do security work if businesses aren't doing well. And before you know it, you're jumping into thing. You know, I moved to Virginia for a while because a friend of mine was up there with the Navy, and I went and worked up there, was working with Avis and coaching college football up there for a few years. And then, you know, he ended up with some issues with the military. So I came back home because it was the only place I had where I could have a safety net, because obviously with him going to jail, I had no safety net, nowhere, you know, I was going to be in a detrimental situation. So I came back here and... then from there, you know, self-advancement and everything, I've decided to become a politician. I ran for Congress in 2022. I lost.
Wait. U.S. Congress?
Yes.
I lost.
I lost, but the lady who
beat
me.
I don't care if you lost. That's just awesome that you did it, to be honest. I mean, I really think that's cool. I mean, you know, I figured when you said politician, I was imagining like you were like, you know, on some... you know, city council or some like, you know, some hodunk town, you know what I mean? Like, so you're running like a U.S. Congress.
I'm a person that wants change, and I feel like the best way to get change is not to talk about it, pray about it, but to do something about it.
Yeah.
I feel like you lead by example. I want to be the example.
That's cool. Can we backtrack a little bit in your life here? So you went to college for biology. They got a degree in chemistry, right? And then I'm assuming chemistry helped you become a drug dealer. Yeah, is that fair to say?
It just gave me more offers. That's what happened.
What's up?
It gave me more offers.
Sure.
Okay. So like, Breaking Bad, cooking some good meth.
No. But I have been offered, do you want to make LSD for me? Do you want to make meth in front of me for me? I'm like, no. I want to do something productive with my life, not go back to the world I got away from as a kid.
Gotcha. And then you were a bouncer, all right, for a little while, and I can only think that being a drug dealer could somehow lead to being a bouncer. Like, you got it protecting your business, you know, and you I believe it or not, I actually see a logical progression in your career. You know, it kind of makes sense that you would go from drug dealer to bouncer
to, you know, all these different things. So, yeah, you know.
I always believe that when you see world from every perspective, you start realizing the direction we have to go. You know, I've been at the bottom. I've been with the drug dealers. I've been with guns put to my head. I've been in the worst of the worst. And I've also been in rooms with nothing but billionaires.
Yeah.
So I've seen the dynamics of what the human experience is. I've got to pay all those expenses in myself.
Which billionaires were those?
I got certain phone numbers, so I'm not saying nothing because I don't
want to know who you're partying with, man. I want to know who you're partying with now.
Ain't no partying with them. I've just met them through functions, you know, because of this function or that function.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do a lot of political things, and me going to political rallies and things, I meet them.
And they're good customers of the drug dealing crowd, I would imagine. No,
as I said, I'm not doing that no more. At this point, economically, sometimes I really do wake up going, man, I wish I had drug money still.
And before we started recording, Sarah had mentioned that you look like you're broadcasting to us from Dexter's, like one of Dexter's kill rooms.
Well, where I'm at in Alabama, you know, it's not usually cold, but for the last 3 or 4 years, we've had like a snap where it was like sub 10 degrees or sub zero. And this room that I'm in is my traditional, it's my billiard room, actually. Mm-hmm. So I have the big screen TV. I have all the stuff in here. And this is where I like to sit down and do meetings and things because I have one on my computer right here. My one in my room is a bigger one, but this is the one that I can move around.
It's also a good room for murdering people.
There's a garage, actually, sadly. No, the key, though, is since it does get cold and this room is so large, being the fact that it's almost half the size of my house, it gets too cold in here. So when it's this temperature, you know, I can put the plastic up, kind of cut the room in half, and keep whatever side I'm in warm so that it isn't, you know.
We know all about the weird cold weather for the last 3 and 4 years. Like, we're here in Dallas, Texas, and we've had the same thing. It's just been like, you know, snowpocalypse, crazy cold weather. It's really been a strange 3 or 4 years for winters in the South. You know, it's just been like that. But all right, so now that we have a better understanding of your career, so you're a politician, right?
Yes,
And you ran for Congress, but you didn't make it. But what was that like?
You know, I always, when I ever walk into a new business, I always realize first that, you know, there's what you want to do in business and there's the actual way things work. You know, like you think, okay, if I do this, this, and this and get these permits, I'll have my business up and running in about a month. And 9 times out of 10, it takes 3 times longer than that because of all the red tape, you know, all the personal politics in the area. Well, when you do that, politically, it's like, oh, I can just do this, this, and this. No, you find out that it's months and months and months of process. And you end up spending about a year and a half just to get one good election in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have all these people hitting you up. Some are hitting you up and they were like, look, we just want to hand you money because we agree with the way this platform is. They don't ask you to, you know, bend your ethics. And then other groups call you and they're completely like, if you do this, please bend your ethics. And so you have everybody coming at you. You know, you would think majority of the time is you talking and trying to get your name out there. Majority of your time is you on the telephone talking to people one-on-one, which is extremely difficult. You know, you have all these people trying to raise funds besides all of the people trying to, you know, get back credit card payment or whatever's calling these people. Nobody wants to answer their phone. And you're spending hours a day calling people, hoping a few of them will give you some cash to make your day worthwhile. So then you at least pay the bills for the campaign for the day. And I learned that it's, you know, some of these people come in with a lot of money already because of like Donald Trump or such and such. They have money already, or they have enough rich friends already. Well, I'm more of an outsider. Even though I know certain people, I've always been the outsider.
I would have never guessed you were an outsider.
So raising money is a little more difficult, you know, because I didn't have the backing. I mean, I was going to run as an independent. That was my entire goal, was I wanted to not be affiliated. But as I learned very quickly in the process, no, it's a two-party system, and if you're at least a part of one of the parties, you at least have some guaranteed income because you need something. You need at least voter support and that behind you to get something. So I did it and joined the Democratic Party because I'm going to take a line from Reagan. I never left the Republican Party. It left me.
Yeah.
When it went more and more extreme, more and more anti-democratic, that's the exact opposite of me. I feel like democracy is what we're for. I'm for the American experiment. So they pushed me away, and it was like, well, in a two-party system, I got to pick a side. I know what side I got to pick because of my ethics on that.
Had you ever held an office or run for an office prior to trying to get into Congress?
No, but, you know, as I said, when I was in elementary school, high school, and college, I was in student body. I had, you know, I was actually elected in. I actually, and especially in college, the president of the student vice, a student president was actually a friend of mine. He brought me on. I had multiple committees I was over. So I did get a taste of it, but it wasn't what I was thinking I was going to do in my life. I thought I was going to medical school. I didn't know I'd get burned out. I didn't know that my path would have to take a complete different turn. I never wanted to be a politician. I don't like politics personally. But then as I thought about it, I was like, isn't that probably the best thing you want? Is you want a person in politics that hates it because he's more likely to do the right thing and not play politics? He actually is a better observation of what America should be than what it is.
Well, I don't know if I really want people who hate their job to have such an important job.
I feel like it allows me to be a little more objective, though, because I'm not standing politically and trying to gain power.
I've been in plenty of jobs that I hated, and I can tell you I did not do those jobs well. You know,
so I hated my jobs, but I always did them well. It's personal pride for me.
As you're talking too, it reminds me. So you said something else on your resume. We went through. You were a drug dealer, and then like a business owner. And of course, I can imagine that drug dealing helped you get into business owning. No, I just think all these jumps. I'm making these connections in my head. I love it. It's such an interesting change of occupations and pursuits and stuff. So you didn't make it into Congress, obviously, but how did you fare? Like how many votes did you get?
I'm in a red district that's plus red 20, plus 20 R. So a lot of Democrats actually voted in the Republican primary instead of the Democratic primary. So I lost by like a handful of votes in the Democratic primary. And the lady that beat me, she hired me as her campaign manager. So, I mean, I literally got, you know, those people don't get to say they've been on a congressional campaign as a campaign manager, and I got to say that too.
Yeah,
I can have that as in my resume because of that. Well, we lost Adele Strong in the final because it being a plus 20. I got her everything I could out of it. Every time we met a group, like this is a black lady who went to a black university, a historically black college. Every time we went to a black group like NAACP, the Alabama Democratic Convention, which is the ADC, which is all black for Alabama, they had all vouched for me, not for her. They all signed off that they wanted me instead of her, and she was mad about it. So everybody endorsed me because they liked me more than you, but you won because of the dynamics of that vote.
What was your haircut like when you were doing? Really?
I wanted it. Look, that was the one thing my campaign manager hated. He's like, I can't stand the fact that you are so outside the box with the haircut. He goes, everything else looks normal. When you're in a suit and you do everything like you do, you look like a great politician, but your hair is so out there. Like, that's the point. I want people to understand. I am always this. I am always authentic. There is no fake because I don't want you to vote for something that ain't me.
No, I like that. I like that. I mean, as a first time politician, though, I wouldn't have expected it. You know, as if you're trying to get in, you're trying to get in and play the game, you often want to play by their rules, you know, but it's after you've been in for a while where you're like, oh, I'm going to screw it. I'm going to let them, you know, I'm going to change the rules. I like that. It's too bad you didn't get in. You remind me not anything else. You just, you know, just based on your physical appearance and how you're different than most politicians, it reminds me of Fetterman, you know, John Fetterman in the past election. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's wearing like hoodies business suits, you know.
We have a similar height. We're in the same ballpark of height. He's 6'9", I'm 6'7".
You have not suffered any brain damage that you know of, do you?
Not that I know of. Although I did have a car wreck about 80 mile an hour head-on last year. But I've only noticed that it takes me a little longer to remember a new name. Like, mm-hmm. used to it was like I only had to hear it once or twice. Now it takes about three times. So there has been a little slowdown there.
That also comes with knowing more people. I used to be one of these people. I would meet somebody and I could meet them once, and 5 years later I remember their name. And now I started working in clinic and that all went out the window. When you have so many people that you're meeting, it becomes a lot more difficult.
Oh yeah, I mean, this week alone I have three podcasts, I have to go to two jobs, and I have business tomorrow about creating a new shirt venture with somebody who's starting a shirt company, and I'm working in with this venture. I talked to a dude this weekend. He's got a computer company I might start joining into, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I meet a lot of people in a lot of different fields, and it does make it a lot harder.
This guy's wheeling and dealing all the time. I love it, man. He's got that hustler mentality, you know, man. Do you ever deal drugs?
all of those jobs, right? They all play their part. So I did a job interview this last year for something that's in my field, and they said to me, well, you've been doing all this stuff. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I've been a clinician for 20 years. So I didn't just stick in one area. Like, I was interested in different things. Yeah. And all of those areas, you know, they help you have a new perspective. So,
oh, yeah. I take things I've learned from one business and I use them in other businesses all the time. You know, I think it's a continuous growth. The more different things you learn, the more things you learn that you did wrong and you can fix. And the more things you learn you did right and you can use those and go farther.
That's one reason why your career progression does not surprise me. You know, because so I'm somebody, I don't know how well you're familiar with me, but I started my career as a psychologist, and psychologist then turned like professor of psychology, turned comedian, turned public speaker, turned author. You know, like each, if you were to say, oh, well, he's an author who does a podcast, right? Like, he's like, well, you know, how do you get to that point, you know, from like a psychology background? You know, it's like unless you understand those steps to get there, you never, they seem so disparate, you know?
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Yeah. So like from, you know, let's say drug dealer, bartender or whatever it is to, you know, whatever you are now, it just seems so out, you know, off the wall, but there is definitely a progression, you know? And so do you still have political aspirations?
Absolutely. My intent is to see what happens here in the next few elections. You know, I could see the Republican Party completely turn in on itself. Mm-hmm. I could see them be getting a position where they get in charge and we have some, you know, some kind of breakdown. There's a lot of different things that happen. We are in a time that there is no security in our elections and political system. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to let me see these next few years, because my goal was after the first one, it's going to take about 10 years to really build that kind of background with podcasts and, you know, working on social media and getting, you know, getting out there and more with the people to get that name behind me and to have that national recognition where when I do run, there will be that kind of money from all over the nation coming behind me. So I have the chance to have a good fight. But if everything goes a certain way, I could have a chance here in 2 years or 4 years from now, mm-hmm. and not have to wait another 6 to 8 years. Yeah. So being that kind of thing, I've kind of left it open because if the cards fall right, obviously I'm could be in a great position.
Right. Yeah.
Sure. You mentioned Huntsville being was it like your area? I guess is it county as a red county or?
What's funny is Huntsville City itself is Madison County. Madison County is slightly red. The city's largely blue. There's a lot of being a city with NASA here. There's a lot of transplants come from other states. It's really interesting because, you know, you think of Alabama, there's the incestuous jokes, the racism jokes. But I'm going to be honest, there are people that I know in the outer areas that qualify. But when you're in the major cities, Birmingham, Montgomery, Huntsville, it's a whole different feel. Like I've been to New York and I feel like there's more racism in some places in this country than in Huntsville.
Yeah, of course. Right, of course. It's funny. I never really thought about it though. Like the NASA people and that it's a huge chunk of Huntsville. It's like either a scientist or college students.
Exactly.
Those people tend to be transients. And they don't necessarily register to vote with it in the place that they're only going to live for a couple of years. You know, I mean, so maybe there it would still be kind of red. You know?
But I mean, it is changing. There was a 1% difference in a House seat for the state House in my district. A friend of mine lost by 2 percentage points. They found out the guy that won was from outside the district. And had actually broke voting laws, lost his job, and went to jail for it. So now they're rerunning the election with her and this guy who finished in second place, who she has an advantage over, and they're running at the end of this month. And they think that because of demographics change in the last year and change, that she should win by a percentage point or two. Hmm. So it's right there where it's almost a purple district in a red state.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Well, whatever that pans out for you, you know, this is an election year. Politics are all over the place, so it's definitely an interesting time, you know. And what you said, you just want to make the world a better place. Like that's what you kind of
that's my goal.
Objective. How is making the world a better place in your mind?
I feel like if you have good policy and you set, you know, the table right, then you can make sure that everybody's fed. I look at the world as, let's make sure everybody's needs are met. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's wants should be more important than anybody's needs. Once everybody's needs are met, then you can fight for what you want. But as long as everybody's needs are met, at least you know that your society be running better. Crime rate will drastically decrease in a situation like that. You won't even technically need churches or anything like that, because you don't need any kind of charity, because everybody's needs are met. So the goal is to find an ethical way to make it where those that have ambition can still grow themselves, but without getting so much wealth that they take away from everyone else, so that we can make sure that everybody's needs in this country are met. And if you do it in one country, you're basically kind of a candle for the rest of the world to see how they can run the same math. Like, the numbers will never be the same, but the ideals behind the math and the percentages should be similar, depending on the population.
You're trying to, you know, ruffle some feathers down there. You know,
I'm all for ranked choice voting. I'm trying to break the two-party system. Like, I really want there to be accountability. I want term limits in. I want age restrictions like there were before Reagan went in. You know, I want to make it where our government is built to support the people, like it was supposed to be, like democracy was founded on in Greece. Mm-hmm. You know, right. I want it just to do its damn job.
Just where do you stand on drugs as far as a legality issue?
Well, I actually can get rid of any problems with the border, guarantee us $30 billion a year in income if I legalize drugs and I actually properly implemented it. I could literally guarantee mental health for all Americans and it not come out of any taxpayer dollars. All I'd have to do is legalize the drugs, tell the rich businessmen that own Pfizer and all that, hey, go to Colombia, negotiate for the coke. Go to Afghanistan, negotiate for the poppies. Get them directly. You clean them up. Because if you have fentanyl in your drugs, you're going to get sued. Now, anybody that brings fentanyl, dude, you're the one that brought a poison. That's a poison. We're going to treat it as such. Because all our drugs will be coming clean. Us now having a business control over those major drug markets for the world means we can outcompete the drug lords of the world and basically get rid of the drugs and the drug gangs. Imagine Mexico. All these people seeking asylum here because they're trying to get rid of, away from their drug gangs and their drug wars. There's no gangs now because now they don't have the money to pay off politicians. Now the police are arresting them because they can't get paid off. So the drug gangs are gone. Those people aren't going to come to America. Now they stay in Mexico. Don't have a reason to come here. Drugs can't come across the border, which last week, the only ones they caught were in a car with a bunch of white dudes that were from America, went over there, bought fentanyl, and brought it back. That was the only car they caught of fentanyl. But
were they some spring breakers, or I didn't see that story?
It was $140,000 worth of fentanyl.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, see, I don't know who's bringing it, but the point is they are obviously using that port of entry.
Right.
I want to get rid of fentanyl. Look, we have an issue with drugs. We have an issue with mental health in this problem of this country. But if we do this, we could literally be giving out at least proper amounts of the drugs where people don't OD. Also, because we'd be taxing that new white market of drugs, we would have that money to build and increase our health, mental health care in this country, which will get more people off of drugs. Because that's the whole goal, is I want less drug usage. Well, if I have happier people that are in better mental positions, there's going to be less drug uses. That means I'm getting rid of street dealers. My entire goal was to get rid of people like I was as a kid, because I feel like that's how I've improved society. I've made sure the bottom rung doesn't need to go and commit crimes and break laws to make money. They can go to work and have a good life. So they have no reason to think about alternatives. And the people that are hurting mentally, they have a place that can help them now. And they don't need those drugs as often. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at how to actually fight a problem. I don't care about the ideologies. I'm a pragmatic person. I see a problem. How's the best way to fix it?
Agree with you on some of the points about immigration and all the other related issues that go along with drugs. But I just like to get. I never have an opportunity to ask a former drug dealer who's currently a politician.
I actually, while I was running, got an article in High Times magazine. That was like a dream come true to have an article in High Times magazine.
Let me just say, I kind of guessed you might be pro legalization, given that history. You know, is Alabama? Is it, how are they on weed? Has Alabama legalized weed yet?
We've legalized it through medicinal. They still haven't approved who can be the medicinal suppliers or any of that. No. They're trying to drag their feet to press it farther. My thought is, why don't you legalize it uniformly since you have an issue of raising money because all your money keeps going to other states for the lottery because you don't want to put it here, even though they finally voted for it. You're not going to make your money because you're only going to make off your own guys. You can't pull from the outside. But if you legalize drugs, again, where market share, you would see people from Mississippi, Tennessee, and all them coming to Alabama to buy drugs and then leaving. So that would at least bring economics and taxes to our state that we obviously don't get from the, we won't be getting from any lottery because nobody from outside is coming here if they already got it there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just got back from Arkansas and Missouri, and those are two states that have legalized marijuana. Arkansas was legal last time we were there, right?
Yes.
Missouri, I think they just recently legalized it. And every state has done it differently. Let me tell you, Missouri has fully embraced legalized marijuana. Like, there are giant stores, like the larger dispensaries than I've seen in other states, you know? And so it's nice to see. I don't know anything about it, the economics. I don't know anything about other policy, but it's nice to see where it looks like it, they're doing it right. And, you know, I don't know if they are or not. Maybe they're having some kind of problems I don't know about. But I just seen these massive businesses, you know, on the side of the road. You know, it's like Route 66 dispensary. I was like, yeah, man, I'm gonna hop on in and, you know, get my kicks.
Absolutely. I always feel like even if you are coming up with a new idea, you do have to really monitor it. Because there's one thing about having an idea and then implementing that idea into a real world. You know, you think you have it right, but you miss a detail here and there and it completely goes haywire. So you really do need to keep your eye on it so that you can find those loopholes and kind of get those closed and get that system working the way you should idealize the system,
right,
in the theory of the system.
Well, I know in healthcare, I used to work with older adults, now I work in peds, but every October, Medicare laws would change, which of course impacts every single, you know, insurance and whatnot. And it was really amazing. And it was good that they tried to change and update things, but it's really interesting how things would be written and how they would actually play out. You know, like one year we could treat a patient and this is what we did and it worked just fine. And the next year you're like, okay, this isn't so good. This patient is really being seen for longer than they should, just because of the way the rule is written. And then the same patient the next year, or same type of patient, I should say, wouldn't get the care that they needed and they really needed it. You know, it's just really interesting to see how these things truly play out versus written in politics.
I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't do when they're higher up the ladder in like politics and whatnot. They don't go down to the base level and ask the people who are actually dealing with it daily. Because that's really where you find out how things are working. You know, oh, I put this, the guy, the middle management guy or the higher up guy says we're doing great. But you go down to the nurses and the doctors treating and the patients, and you'll find out that it is not working like you expected.
No,
and you can at least ask them, because at least knowing what they're going to do, you can find the solutions that will be written in the law that can help administer the new situations.
I mean, on the floor level, we end up figuring out ways, like a little bit of creative billing, a little bit of not lies, just like how you can get your patient what you need within the means of the law and the ability, you know. But yeah, it is quite interesting.
Yep. So not having a run 2 years ago and not getting elected, what are you currently doing just until you decide to run again?
I've been spending my time working on social media, as I said, trying to build these new career new business opportunities. I've been, of course, trying to just pick up shifts anywhere I can, just getting money. Just trying to keep the house payment and everything. You know, I figure if I keep working on what I'm doing, my friend is right now, he's trying to work on getting himself ready so he can start the podcast for us. He's the guy that's kind of the TikTok guy, the guy that can get that. And so we're trying to put, you know, everything together, you know, so I can have an economic backing for my daily life because I still got to pay bills.
Right.
And also build my portfolio as a human being and my recognition across the nation, you know, so that I can have that. Everything is just going towards that right now. It's keeping me very busy. Days I'm not busy, I feel like I'm losing time just because I really want, you know, to see things move forward. Because if I do get enough with social media and whatnot, I might even get to be a, like a CNN correspondent or something. And then they're paying me to do what I'm already doing now and not having to go pick up shifts to do bouncing or do this or do that. I can just work.
Yeah. Everybody wants to be a social media influencer these days. I mean, that's why you're on our podcast.
I feel like it's, I feel like CM Punk in wrestling said it best. To him, it's a mic. To you, it's a mic. To him, it was a pipe bomb. For me, yeah. It's a nuclear weapon. And I know if I can get to Congress, you're basically giving me the national mic. That means you're giving me the nuclear weapon. You're giving me the way to change society. And I've got to do whatever it takes to keep getting this mic and showing people what I can do so I can keep getting it until I get that one. So then I can prove it. Because that's my entire goal.
I don't want to, I'm not a very political person, so I don't, but I know that you've got some like some sort of radical outsider, you know, political concepts that you would want to bring forward. I just know that I know you have that. I know you're gonna go in there, you're gonna get elected one of these days. And you're just going to mess up the whole system. You're just going to bring it down from within.
That's what I want. I don't want to bring it down. I want to make it what
you,
it should
you be. You get the metaphor. I don't mean bring it down, but the metaphor is that you're going to disrupt it. You know, you're a disruptor, right?
Yes. That is everything. You know, I really was – I've seen what I saw, and I think what made me become a politician is – and I don't know how many people are going to drive crazy from you that are friends or fans or whatever, but – I saw what Trump did, and I said, this is the exact opposite of who I am. He says he's this, but he's a hypocrite in every way. What he says and what he does are two different things. They never match. I can outtalk him. I literally, while on the campaign trail, was taking MAGA voters, Republican voters, Libertarians, Independents, and Democrats away from everybody else every time I talked in a room full of them. I went to the room of Republicans. It was all Republicans and me running for the same position. I'm the only Democrat in the entire room. Every one of those politicians shook my hand before they shook everybody else and told me that they loved what they said. They, we may not agree with you, but the way you present, the way you say things, we like you. If it's you and Dale Strong, we're voting for you. The Republicans that were sitting there like, you know, we've never voted. We don't vote Democrat. We're not Democrats, but I would vote for you, anybody, any day else. And I'm like, that's the type of people I can win everybody because I am what America really is on everybody. Because I've seen everybody. I've lived with everybody.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm getting the impression that if I lived in Huntsville and you were running, I might actually just register to vote, man.
I 100% feel like if we had every American voting, we would actually be able to get rid of a lot of the extremacy. The more you have of people voting, the more likely you're going to get that bell curve where most people are in the middle. And that's really where we need to be, in the middle, actually solving problems and not being idealistic out here on the edges trying to destroy society or make some society that's not possible or just unethical.
How do we get more parties?
Ranked choice voting. Given the opportunity for people to pick other alternatives. As long as you have a two-party system and you get one vote and that's it, it's going to stay a two-party system. I honestly think when you have a chance to have a fourth, a fifth, a sixth option, and you see that some of their ideas are going to get them voted ranked second or third out of those, you know, things. And that person that they voted for first, that might be the big party, but not enough people vote for them as first, so they don't win. And the second place guy, a whole new party wins. Right. And they go in there and do some good work and show you what they got. Maybe we can see advancement.
What's kind of interesting about that is that ranked choice voting, you know, a lot of people aren't really clear on the concept because we don't have that. But that's something we do in comedy. So, for example, we run comedy contests every once in a while. Like there's a, you know, comedians all competing for a cash prize or for the bragging rights. You know,
a few times.
Yeah. So I've managed a bunch of comedy contests in my career, and you always ask people, okay, vote for your top five comedians, you know, top five, because they're all going to vote for their friend, right? They're all going to vote for the person that they're there to support. And then they're going to vote for the actually funny people, you know? And so, and that's kind of a system like that would, you know, obviously, you know, it's like your politician isn't your friend necessarily, but you're going to place your vote for the guy who you either paid to support or is paying or, you know, there's all kinds of reason to get that one vote in. And then, hey, I got it. And now I can list these others that I want. So now we have more options and, of course, a lot more equitable votes to spread around. And I think that's kind of a cool way to do it. It might be a little complicated because I'll tell you, at comedy shows, people have a hard time with those instructions. All right.
As I said, I've done comedy. And if I find an open mic, I go to do it because I – being a politician, I'm like, what is a politician?
You've done comedy? Yeah, let me go back to this bio.
I haven't put that in there yet. That's a new thing. Like, I realized, like,
anywhere in there.
I put it like, there's a reason that's not in there. It just ain't in there yet. But the reality is, after being a politician and being on stage, because I really hadn't been on stage a lot, but being on politician and being on stage and winning all those cheers and everything, it'd be kind of something like, I like being on stage. I like doing this.
Yeah.
So I need more chances to be on stage to get better at it. And since I don't have an office where I can literally just go in front of the media every day, it was, well, let's go do comedy. I already have a bunch of jokes. I've already lived a weird life with a bunch of weird backgrounds and stories.
Yeah.
Just throw the stories out there.
Are you open micing around Huntsville?
I have, and I do.
All right, very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, start branching down to Birmingham, maybe shoot up to Nashville, you know, when you can for a gig or two. I wouldn't necessarily say Huntsville is a hot spot, but you are, it's a good place to grow your presence on stage. And then you can start branching out to like Birmingham or Nashville or some of the other venues. But I definitely support you entering comedy. You have everything you need to be a comedian.
I do. Plus, I have that really dark, twisted, psychopathic sense of humor. So it's really going to come out.
Yeah. No, I can totally see that. Charlie, I wish you luck in whatever you do, whether it's comedy, politics, or any of these other businesses or just, whatever. I mean, porn. I don't know.
I'm not going to lie. There was a time I had that as a business. I actually had a website, and I was trying to make money off of
it. That's the business we should have been talking about.
Well, that was right when I got out of college. But then within 6 months, that's when Pornhub really became. It's like, oh, well, if you got free porn, I can't sell you porn now. Like, there's no point in this.
You have any more questions?
No.
Good to meet you, Charlie. Thanks for reaching out.
It was great. I hope to see you guys again sometime. Maybe next time you're on travels, you can stop by and see us.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on the podcast. And folks, those of you watching or listening, thank you so much for sticking with us for this episode. This has been another episode of On the Road with Dr. Brian.
Thanks for watching.
Bye-bye. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. I'm an asshole.